Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, August 6, 2012. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is not with us this week. For those of you who missed last week's show, he did indeed have his baby last week, and he thought he would make it on Sunday anyway, but no, it didn't happen. We'll see if he's back with us next week. In the meantime, you got me. And I'm going to do one of these things again where over the next few days I record a little bit each day and then I put it together. So I'm starting this show on Monday, August 6th, but who knows when I'll end it. But you'll be very happy to know, and you can probably tell already, I'm not doing this from my car. Because I've done that a number of times, and every time when I put the show together later, I'm like, oh my god, this sounds awful. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do it from the car. I'm not going to do it recording from my phone while I walk down the street. Just going to do this here. And we do have a few topics. We'll talk a little bit about, just a few hours ago as I record this, we had the Mars landing Curiosity landed on Mars. I watched that. I'll talk a little bit about that. I finally have Mountain Lion installed on my computer. I'll talk a lot about that. And of course, the usual election update. But first, you know, since Yvonne just had his baby, little Manuel, and as far as I know, by the way, Manuel and Juana and Yvonne are all doing well. More once they get here. But when I had Alex, when my wife had Alex, just under 3 years ago, we had the shortest Curmudgeon's Corner ever. I believe it was under 3 minutes. I meant to look that up before the show, but I forgot, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but it was really, really short, because, like, I started to record it in the room, in the hospital room, you know, shortly after the baby was born. It was, like, 24 hours later, something like that, I forget. But I tried to do it while everybody was asleep, and... and then I started talking and they started waking up. So I'm like, I won't do this. And, you know, that's actually been one of my regrets. Not a catastrophic regret or anything, but, you know, it would have been nice to record like 15 minutes of my thoughts just on, you know, hey, new baby, rather than like, you know, 2 minutes or whatever it was. Of course I looked it up, 2 minutes and 51 seconds. Yeah, there you go. But I didn't, and, time passes, so those thoughts are gone, I guess. But I will, you know, on the occasion of Yvonne becoming a father, I will talk for a little bit about, you know, parenthood, I guess. Now, a lot of you listening are parents, so there's nothing I'm going to say here that's new to anybody there, and people who aren't parents are just going to roll their eyes and go, oh, there he goes again. But what the hell, you know? I've got two kids now. I've got Amy, who I came into my life when she was 7 years old, and I believe actually moved in and started living with me when she was 8. And of course, I've got Alex, who will be turning 3 next month. Very different experiences there, of course. I've watched Amy from being, you know, a rambunctious, energetic 7-year-old to growing into a young woman. I mean, she's 16 now and acts 18. I'm not going to say she acts like older than that, but you see them transform into adults. You see the growth every day. And then, of course, with Alex, it's an entirely different thing having an infant than having a tween and then a teen. But in both cases, you know, you see them learning new things all the time. You see them picking up things from you. You see how over time... I don't know. Of course, I'm going to bumble this because I didn't make any notes. But to see, you know, the firsts. You know, whether it's the teenage firsts, you know, which hopefully some of them we don't... Yeah, there's all kinds of things going on there that parents don't necessarily want to know about. But, or the toddler firsts. You know, just the other day, yesterday, I believe, you know, Alex was sitting there and, you know, he starts blinking his eyes and he says, you know, the lights go out when I close my eyes. You know, the sun goes down when I turn my eyes off. And, you know, oh, blinking is fun. Look, you can control the world by blinking. And, you know, it's a discovery. And, you know, he figures out how to do something new with his toy. And, or, you know, as the language explosion happens, being able to express more and more and be more of a person. It's just an amazing process to watch. And it's one of those things that, you know, just being part of it is such a fulfilling experience. You know, seeing all of that process happen, seeing the child become a teenager, become an adult, seeing the toddler learn for the very first time how to walk, how to run, how to open a door for themselves, you know, hopefully soon potty training, you know, crossing fingers, watching Amy drive for the first time. And like I said, a lot of it, the seeing yourself there too. And, you know, obviously Amy's not genetically mine, but every day I see things in her that seem like they come from me. You know, in terms of some of the things she likes, the way she talks about things, the jokes she makes, and you see the littler one, you know, imitating everything you do as you walk around, and wanting to, you know, more than anything else, be with you and be around you and do that kind of thing. And you know, that goes away when they're teenagers. but, you know, anyway, it's one of those defining life experiences, I guess. And like I said, there's nothing new from this. Lots of you out there are parents. You guys know. But, and those of you who aren't parents, you know, are rolling your eyes and don't want to know. But, you know, so anyway, welcome Yvonne to the club. He's in those very early days right now, where the baby's not sleeping through the night yet, and it's all brand new, and, you know, everything changes. And we'll see how that goes. And, oh, speaking of which, Alex, you want to come say hi? I'm recording my podcast right now. The dog pooed?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he poo in the backyard?
Yeah.
Yeah, you need me to go clean it up?
Yeah. Dad, oh. Clean it up. My dog wish. Yeah. Dog wish a walk.
Yeah, then you want to walk the dog? Yeah. You know, I'm going to have to go to work in a few minutes, but I can clean that up.
Clean it up, pee-wee.
Yes. And on that exciting note, let's take a break. We'll be back sometime. I gotta go to work, but when I get back sometime, I will talk about the Curiosity Landing, and then we'll move into Mountain Lion, the election, and there's a bunch going on in Syria too. I might mention that. We'll see. In any case, time for a quick break. We'll be back after this. Alex, do you want to say goodbye? No? Okay, he's sticking his tongue out. We'll see you after the break. Bye-bye.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break. A wonderful break, yes indeed this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break, 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 yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now, and now, and now, and now the break is over.
Okay, I'm now back. It is Tuesday, August 7th now. As I said, I waited a little while before coming back. But, you know, not only is it Tuesday, August 7th, it is here in Everett, Washington, suburb of Seattle. It is the middle of the night. I do not know why I'm awake. It is 10:30 UTC, which is 3:30 in the morning. I should have gone to bed hours ago. I should have gone to bed before midnight. But I didn't, because I've got a thing for work at 8:30 in the morning. I can probably do it by conference call, but if I was to go in person to the meeting, I have to be leaving home before 7 a.m. Or no, it's at 8:30 now, about 7 a.m. Am I out of my freaking mind? Why am I awake? Why am I doing stuff? And I don't really have a good answer. Well, you know, Alex had taken a long nap, and then he got up, and then it was like 12:30 by the time he was down, and blah, blah, blah. But then I'm like, I should do this. I should do that. And I sit down on my computer, and next thing you know, it's 3:30 in the morning. And I haven't even done everything I needed to have done, and I was going to go to sleep, but I was like, no, you know, let me do that segment, because if I don't do it now, who knows when I'll have a chance to do it. Anyway, I'm out of my freaking mind. Why? Anyway, I won't go on too long on this one, this segment anyway. I did want to talk a little bit about the Curiosity Landing. I did stay up. I watched it live. I was watching Universe Today's commentary for a while, but then for the actual landing, I just went with the raw feed from NASA TV. Not the NASA TV one that had the commentary, but they were running a second feed that was just raw camera in the control room, no commentary, no nothing. And that's what I turned to for the majority of, you know, the 7 minutes of terror and everything. You know, for those of you who didn't follow this, this is, you know, first of all, landing on Mars has had a very spotty record in the past. I guess it's under 50% of the missions that have tried to land there have actually succeeded. The rest, something has gone wrong with. And this includes both American and non-American efforts. I think the American ratio is slightly better than the international ratio, but not by that much, really. Anyway, it's hard. It's very hard. And this time around, they were doing it through just a mechanism that when you read about it, you're like, really? You've got to be freaking kidding me. Really? Because, you know, the thing comes in at, like, amazing speeds into the atmosphere. It slows down first just through the atmosphere itself using a heat shield, and then it pops parachute out, and you're like, okay, this is all cool. You know, we've seen this before. You know, that's how Apollo landed. That's how the Soyuz lands today. You know, basically like that. But then, you know, in those two cases, you know, Apollo splashed down into ocean. The Soyuz lands on the ground, but basically the same idea. The parachute slows them down, and then they stop. Now, of course, Mars's atmosphere is slower, so it's harder to thinner, so it's harder to slow down that way. But you still, parachute slows down. But then what do? They try to guide it in on rockets, the way they did the moon landings. And so, you've got this capsule coming down with the parachutes guiding itself, and then at a certain point it jettisons the parachutes and it's trying to find out where it's going to go. And this is all autonomous guidance, because the light delay to Earth is something like 14 minutes, almost half an hour round trip, so there's no way they could tell it what to do in real time. It has to all be automated in advance. So the thing's trying to figure out where to land and blah, blah, blah. And once it finds a spot that it likes and it's slow enough, it starts lowering down the lander from this rocket platform and then drops it off, and then the cables break and the thing goes flying off, and you know, so many points here where something could go wrong. It's like a cable gets tangled, the parachute doesn't open, you know, they can't find a flat spot to land on, there's a big rock in the way, just dozens of things that could go wrong. And that's things that can go wrong even if they've planned for almost everything and they haven't made any major mistakes. The one that always comes up is the one that they lost because they forgot to convert between the metric and imperial measurement systems, and you're like, really? Really? You know, but anyway, that was a few years back and they've learned their lesson. Nobody will make that mistake again. But they pulled it off flawlessly, as far as anybody can tell at this point. I mean, who knows, they may still find a problem when they check out all the instruments later, but it looks like it was perfect. You know, and you know, you've seen all the pictures of the people excited in the control room, and you know, the other thing I've seen is a lot of people talk about, you know, how much this costs and how many billions of dollars this costs. But the thing is, when you start comparing it to other things we spend money on, either, you know, what other people, you know, the sort of, I saw, what was the, anyway, there was some comparison with something that, you know, normal people buy, but that's less relevant, I think, than sort of federal budget comparisons. And this stuff is a tiny, tiny portion of the budget. And, you know, people always sort of make the argument, well, we should be spending this money at home, not on space. Why does this space stuff matter? And, you know, first of all, there's the whole, you know, goddamn, knowledge for knowledge's sake is important. Finding out about the universe and how it works and what's going on is, it just at a very fundamental level is just valuable for its own right and is worth expending effort on. Exploration is also, even if the science wasn't there, the mere exploration of it is probably worth it. But there's all kinds of scientific stuff coming out of this too. But okay, let's say you don't buy the notion that knowledge for knowledge's sake is worth a damn. Well, what else do you have here? Well, you've got all kinds of, you know, sort of technological side effects that come out over the years. The space program has generated time after time various products. People will always tell you about Velcro and stuff like that. But it's, you know, it's more than just those little things. It's the incremental knowledge that you're gaining. First of all, the raw science gets you things that many, many years down the road, who knows what technological innovations come from that. But also, to solve these technical problems, people have to come up with, you know, new ideas of how to do guidance systems, how to do control of the automation, how to what materials need to be in there to do this safely. You know, all kinds of things have to be innovated, and many of those end up having, you know, other uses. And then to step back even another level, to be, you know, even more sort of down to earth, they're not spending the money, quote unquote, on Mars. The money is not being spent on Mars. There is not, like, the Mars rover isn't going around with a dollar bill, you know, trying to buy rocks. The money is being spent at the companies that build the rover, at the companies that manage, you know, the government agencies that that actually manage the project, all the contractors that are there. There are, you know, hundreds of jobs involved here, I saw a lot of commentary before the thing landed that, you know, hey, the city of Pasadena is on pins and needles because a significant part of the economy comes from JPL, who runs this rover, and if the damn thing crashed into the ground, then it was very uncertain, you know, what the economic impact would be, because a lot of these people would be out of jobs, and there may or may not be a project that would replace it, because people would be like, you know, well, this didn't work. Why are we going to throw more money at it? So there are all kinds of benefits that come from this stuff. Even if you take out, you know, exploration and expansion of human knowledge out of the picture. But anyway, it was very inspiring to watch. More, please. More, please. You know, and yeah, the human stuff is exciting, but in many ways, the robotic missions are much more practical and can get a... You spend the money on the science and what you need to get the ship there and do the knowledge, not on figuring out how to keep the humans alive. That's not to say I don't want to someday see a human on Mars or, you know, other human-based exploration of the solar system, but the robots really can do a lot. And, you know, someday we may do the humans, and that'll be great too. But we can do a lot with robots, and there's a lot of exciting stuff here. We've got New Horizons heading out to Pluto. We've got another one, I'm going to blank on the name, that's seeing Ceres and a couple other of the major asteroids. You know, it'd be nice to see something, you know, landers for Europa, Titan, other places like that, that show a lot of interesting stuff going on from what we've been able to tell from, you know, orbiters and other other observations of that sort. But it would be nice to get one of something more substantial in those areas. There's a lot of interesting stuff. There are a lot of things to find out. There's a lot of exploration we could be doing. So more, please. And, you know, from a budget point of view, yeah, everybody's, you know, oh, deficit. These are tiny, tiny, tiny projects in comparison to the whole of the federal government. We need more, not less. There's plenty of other places you can, I don't know. The whole budget debate is, of course, a complex one. And but, you know, I saw, what was the estimate at some point? It was like, I'm not going to be able to remember it, but you compare it to the compare these kinds of things to the cost of, you know, fighter jets or other pieces of military hardware. So worth it. Let's spend money on things on like this rather than on better ways to kill people. You know, let's do this. More of this, please. In the meantime, it'll be interesting to watch these things. You know, the last rovers, Spirit and Opportunity, one of them kind of got stuck, but the other one's still going. It's been years. The original lifespan of that mission was supposed to be 90 days, and it's been many years. I think eight years, something like that. And I watched those live when they landed too. That was also, you know, great. But this one is powered by plutonium. Its primary mission is 2 years, but they expect it to last much, much longer than that if all goes well. Perhaps, you know, a decade or more. Yeah, so a lot of interesting stuff should come out of this. And we'll follow it over the years. But, you know, the big attention, of course, is what happened this weekend with the landing. And, you know, most people, even the ones who got excited and tuned in for the landing, are going to sort of tune out for, you know, the years of sort of drudgery of going through the science. I mean, it's not like this thing's a speeder. You know, maximum speed, I believe I read, was 1.5 inches a second, which is pretty darn slow. You know, so, you know, it'll do its thing. Anyway, enough for this segment. We'll be back after this break, which will be a minute or two or whatever for you. For me, it'll probably be another day. We'll come back, talk about Mountain Lion. A few thoughts about it. I've been running it for a little while. I'm in it right now as I'm recording. And we'll talk about that, then the election. And also one thing I hadn't mentioned at the top of the show, there's of course been that new shooting. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about that. Anyway, time for a break. We'll be right back. Or I'll be right back. I'm by myself, kind of. I have my microphone in a new place. I rearranged my office. Do I sound better? Hopefully I sound better. We'll be right back. And indeed, I'm back. And indeed, it's another day. It's now Wednesday, August 8th, UTC anyway. It's 4:25 UTC, which is a little bit after midnight Eastern time. Of course, I'm on Pacific time, so it's still Tuesday if you asked folks around here. But I'm all about UTC. Anyway, I'm going to skip, I'm going to push the Mountain Lion stuff off to the next segment. Because I wanted to do the election update first. And one of the reasons is, I left this to the last moment as always, but today was a primary election day in the state of Washington. Not for president. That happened a long time ago. We had caucuses, and as you all know, if you've been listening, I participated in those as a Ron Paul delegate in the Republican process, and later actually filed to be a PCO in the Republican Party here. And if I had had competition, I actually would have been on the ballot and people would have gotten to vote for me or not. Unfortunately, I was unopposed. So I just won. So I am, the precinct committee officer for the Ruggs Lake precinct, in Snohomish County, Washington, for the Republican Party. Now, what does that actually mean? Not much. I don't do jack, and I have to vote at some organizational meetings for the Republican Party in December or January or something. Basically, my view of this is I'm in it with the idea of any little organizational votes I can do to sort of help shake the Republicans up and oppose the whack job idiots and maybe get some people who are a little bit more rational, that would be cool. And that's not necessarily like, some of the Ron Paul folks scare me a little bit because they're very ideological too. But, somebody who likes the idea of small government, but within reason. And, acknowledging that government, in fact, should be involved in a lot of things, isn't, like, religiously dogmatic about, the Constitution is the best thing ever, although I think it's perfectly legitimate to ask that it be followed. But, anyway, that, all of this is just prelude to say, I went through my ballot a couple hours ago, and I went through all the races, and I did my usual thing where, you know, if there are like six people running for the office, I actually go and look up all six of their websites. And I did this for all the major races. By the time I got to the end of the ballot, I was running out of time. So the degree of my research decreased as I went on. This is the most Democratic ballot I have ever voted on in my life. Now, this is a primary race in Washington State. The top two vote getters go on to compete in the November election. So in theory, you could have two Democrats be the top two or two Republicans be the top two. In practice, you generally end up with one Republican and one Democrat, just as if the parties had separate primaries. But in Washington, it's a unified primary. Everybody who wants to run runs, and the top two come back in November. Historically, if I look back at my voting history, since I've been old enough to vote, I've voted for some Democrats, I've voted for some Republicans, I've voted for some of the third-party guys, or occasionally some of these fringe guys if what they said was somewhat reasonable to me and they didn't seem too insane. This time, except for the nonpartisan offices, it was pretty much a Democratic sweep for me. And that's really, really freaking unusual for me. And I don't know how I feel about it. And the way I'm looking at this is, as I go through and look at the Republicans, I'm like, I can't do that. Even if they say some things I like in some areas, they're advocating for all kinds of things too that I'm like, really? A lot of it's on the social side. A lot of it's on sort of the, you know, standing up for family values, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, really? Come on. Or they're going on about, being absolutely radical about the tax issues and things like that, and not realizing, you got to compromise somehow. You got to, I don't know. I came closest on governor. I came closest to voting Republican in governor race. Both candidates seemed fairly reasonable. The Republican seemed relatively moderate. But he very much seemed to make a point of avoiding taking public stands on a lot of social issues, which could mean one of two things. It could mean that he's secretly a lot more moderate and he wants to not aggravate the base on the Republican side. Or it could be he's secretly a lot more conservative and doesn't want to alienate the centrist voters. But the problem is you can't tell. And it's like, really? It seemed like he was really just avoiding those questions. I'd rather go with the Democrats' positions were well known, and generally, you know, I've explained my position on like gay marriage and stuff here before, which is ideally the government wouldn't be involved in marriage at all, but since it is, I think you should allow gay marriage just as well as heterosexual marriage, and frankly, I'd go even further and say, you know, whatever, it should, again, government shouldn't be involved. It should be contracts between people, and they should be able to do whatever they can come up with in the context of a contract. I couldn't go there either. I almost did. I that's the one that I got closest. But, you know, and on the one hand, am I really getting a lot more liberal as I age? There's certainly a degree to that, because a lot of the areas where I was sort of dogmatically libertarian 10 years ago, I'm like, well, you know, yeah, that would be nice, but let's talk about the real world. I think a lot of it isn't so much that I've moved a lot further left. I really don't think I have. There's certainly some areas, perhaps. But I think the Republican Party has just gone so far away from where I am. I've mentioned before, you know, if it wasn't for Ross Perot, I almost certainly would have voted for George H.W. Bush over Bill Clinton. You know, that's my kind of Republican. And, you know, I've But you don't get those moderate Republicans anymore. I mean, back in the day, you even had liberal Republicans back before the party shifts in the 60s and 70s. But, you know, the moderate Republicans have been scared away. You have all these Grover Norquist tax absolutists. You have, you know, the neocons who are all about international adventurism and sort of neo-imperialism, and military endeavors all over the place, and you know, and on, and you just hear the drumbeat of like, there's no global warming, gay marriage is bad, immigrants are bad. You know, and don't even get me started on the folks who start going on about creationism or other science denial or things like that. It's like, really? Are these... I can't even go there. And even if the candidate doesn't believe it themselves, but they're sucking up to the people who do believe that, that's just such a turnoff. It's like... The correct response to a global warming denier is to tell them they're full of shit. The correct response to, you know, the creationist intelligent design folks is you're full of shit. You know, it's just, it's not keeping up with the real world. It's like, you know, If you want to have your sort of have your religious beliefs and do whatever, you know, I'm not a fan of any organized religion, to be honest. It's all a bunch of superstitious mumbo jumbo to me. And my mom's a minister, but there's religion that can be compatible with understanding the real world and recognizing facts when they're put in front of you and not being so dogmatic about it. I mean, for God's sake, even the Catholic Church recognizes evolution. Anyway, and you know, abortion absolutism and all of this kind of stuff too, and my views are complicated on that too. I'm not straight up, you know, pro-choice, but I'm a hell of a lot closer to that than I am to the straight-up pro-life position. But anyway, what a mess. And I just find myself, and I'm like, oh my God, did I essentially vote an all-Democratic ballot? I can't believe I did that. I've never done that before in my life. But I feel like the reasonable Republicans are very few and far between. I would vote for a more libertarian-ish type person if I found one that was seemed to be reasonable and not dogmatic. And in the national election, I've said before, I'm going to take a close look at Gary Johnson. He might be the kind of person I could support. But I didn't really see those on the ballot here. I mean, the folks that were sort of libertarian-ish were also, you know, judging from their websites and such, just a little bit kooky, just a little bit. Anyway. Oh, and of course, I have my standard protest vote of this was a top two wins and goes on to the next round. So if there were only one or two candidates on the ballot as a protest, I write myself in. Because it's like, really? Why do you bother? If the top two go to the next round and there are only two on the ballot, you don't have to do this. If there's only one, you don't even have to have a freaking election. They just win. And in fact, they did that, like I said, for the PCO position that I won. That's exactly, they just changed it since last year, or whenever the last one of these was, 2 years ago probably, so that they don't put it on the ballot if there's only one candidate. But for other higher level positions, I guess they still do, which is what it's just a waste. So I always protest that by writing myself in. Anyway, election day, I haven't yet looked at returns to see if the people I voted for won or not. Usually most people I vote for lose. It's just, yeah, not always, but you know, anyway, Moving on, this is supposed to be the election segment about the national election, and I've gone on about the local stuff, but I really was dumbfounded that I ended up voting almost straight Democrat. I think in every position that had a party declaration, there's not an official Republican Democrat. They all just say this candidate prefers the Democratic Party or whatever. They self-declare on that. I think every single one that declared a party preference, I went Democrat. And I'm still sort of in shock about that, because that's never been true for me. And it is a primary election. We'll see what happens in the general. But I'm not seeing a lot of Republicans that were on this ballot that I'm feeling anything for. We'll see if it changes. Anyway, national election. I just wanted to give the update that I've been giving. This will be really short. I mentioned in a Sam from the Future note that on last week's show that Romney had gotten to the state where even in his best case, he loses. That is still the case this week. And of course, these are if the election was held today numbers. And of course, the election is not held today. We still have about 3 months left, and things can change. But if the election was held today, bum, 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 we still have Obama beating Romney by 332 to 206, if everybody just gets the states they are ahead in my five-poll average. But even if you give Romney every state that's close, every state where Obama leads by less than 5%, in addition to the ones that Romney is ahead on, he still loses with Obama 278, Romney 260. That's where we are this week. We'll see if there's continued movement. We, of course, do have conventions coming up. And, you know, generally when you watch the polls around a convention, just a heads-up preview there, they call them bumps for a reason. Almost always, what happens in these conventions is while the convention is going on, the party who's having the convention goes up in the polls by several points, they get a bump, and then over the course of the next week or so after the convention, that bump disappears, and they end up exactly where they were before the convention, or very close. There's almost never any permanent effect. So you'll have the Republican convention, and then you'll get a lot of people talking about, oh my God, look, Mitt Romney's gaining. Oh my God, look, Mitt Romney's gaining. And then it'll fade. And then the Democrats will have their convention, and they'll be like, oh my God, Obama's getting a much bigger lead. Oh my God, is it going to be an Obama landslide? I don't know. And then it's going to fade, and it will be right back where we are, which is, unless something else changes the dynamics, is a healthy Obama lead, but not a landslide. And not even the levels that he got in 2008. This will be a closer election than 2008, almost certainly, you know, unless Romney collapses like McCain did. So that's where we are with that. The other thing on the national election, of course, is speculation about Romney's vice president. I'm going to try to get this show out, you know, who am I kidding? I'm going to get it out Friday. I always get it out Friday. I really always want to get it out early. I really should record it on Sunday, get it out on Sunday every week, but, you know, I suck. But I'll probably get this show out Friday, and there are rumors that Romney may announce his VP as soon as Friday, although most people expect next week. And there's people are speculating all kinds of names. You know, there's the ones we've talked about, or I don't know. Yvonne and I haven't really talked that much about this, but you know, there's Pawlenty and Christie and Rubio and these folks. A couple of names that have come up over the last week: Jindal, and then just today, Petraeus have come up. And I'll just say, you know, if you're going to pick a general, Petraeus, cool. Just no General McChrystal, please. I would just have to, like, slam my head against the table. Although I think actually General McChrystal is probably a Democrat, from what I've heard. But anyway,
Sorry, in a previous life, I worked with General McChrystal's brother, for those of you who don't know that. And it wasn't a pleasant experience. Anyway, enough. We'll see. I don't know that there's much point really speculating a lot about the VP, because we'll know in a few days to a week, most likely. And part of the dynamic here is people are wondering, is Romney going to go with a boring white guy to get as far away from repeating the Palin fiasco as possible? Or is he going to try to go with a game changer? And that's where somebody like Jindal comes in. Ethnic background, different than what we've seen before. Or does he try to find another woman? Or does he, although I haven't heard any women's names mentioned on Romney's side this time around. Except, of course, Condoleezza Rice. But people fairly quickly dismissed that and said that's not happening. Although, who knows? He could surprise. But she said she's not interested. Petraeus also has been on the record that he's never going to run for political office. But, people say that, and then someone calls up and says, do you want to run for vice president? Your country needs you. It's hard to say no to that. Anyway, we'll see. The vice presidential pick will most likely not make a huge difference. It has been shown to sometimes make a few points of difference in the home state of the vice presidential pick. It could be argued that in a few other cases, it's made a difference, but fairly rarely. It's usually not that big of an effect on the upside anyway. It is certainly possible, as we found out in 2008, to screw up the vice presidential choice and have a big effect on the downside. But there have only been a handful of cases. The one that's most often pointed to is, of course, Kennedy-Johnson, with Johnson delivering Texas for Kennedy, which delivered the election for him in 1960, along with some shenanigans in West Virginia and some other stuff. And for those of you who don't remember or haven't read about it recently, 1960 was a very, very close election, and there significant arguments that John F. Kennedy actually stole the election by cheating in various places. But Richard Nixon, it's always surprising to say this about Richard Nixon, but Richard Nixon took the high road and did not dispute the election or take it to court or call for recounts or anything in the interest of national unity and bringing the country together, etc. It rarely makes a difference. But it'll be interesting, and we'll talk about it anyway when it happens, and it'll set the flavor for the remainder of the race until November. As my fan makes noises. You probably didn't hear that, but it made a noise. Okay, we'll be back. We'll take a break. I'll talk about Mountain Lion when I get back and some miscellaneous random issues if they come up. And likely, once again, I'll wait another 24 hours before recording the next and last segment of the show. And who knows? Maybe there'll be a vice presidential pick before I talk to you next. Although most people think it'll be longer. We'll see. Here's a break. We'll be back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, I think I do okay. But, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
And here I am, and it's now Thursday, August 9th. See how this works? Each segment, it's a whole new day. This time, it's 11:54 UTC. I got up early to do this segment. I don't like getting up early. But, you know, in fact, I didn't even have my alarm clock. Alex woke me up, blah, 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 you know, but he's back asleep now. But I finished dealing with him, and then I'm like, I'll go back to sleep for a little while. And then I'm like, it's 5 minutes till my alarm was going to go off to go do the show and other stuff. Anyway, I thought I was done with the election stuff, but since I recorded yesterday, two things to say. One, I did Wednesday's update of the Electoral College prediction, and hey, guess what? Things changed. Specifically, both Ohio and Virginia got a little bit tighter with the most recent polls. They had been right on the edge, just over my 5% threshold, and the latest polls moved them just below that threshold. So what that means is that once again, as I click away on my keyboard, Romney is able to win, according to my models. Mainly, if he wins all of the close states, we now have a total that's over the line. And my website's being slow. I'm like, come on, show me my totals. Show me my totals. You know, how annoying. You know, annoying, annoying, annoying. I blame the new Safari on Mountain Lion, which we'll get into in a minute. The new totals, looking at another source, as I click over into Excel. Come on, come on, come on! You know, this is me. I should have prepped this beforehand. Anyway, the new Romney best is 291 for Romney to Obama's 247, now that Ohio and Virginia are back in the close category. Now, they still have substantial Obama leads, you know, in my five-poll average. Don't get me wrong, but they're now close enough that you can imagine Romney pulling them back. Now, you know, I do this, can you imagine, blah, blah, blah. Let me be a little bit more specific on what I mean by all this, because obviously things move around. There's states that, I believe Michigan, for instance, was an example, that was a solid Obama state, greater than 10% Obama state early on in the cycle. And over the course of a month, month and a half, it dropped all the way to a close state where his margins were very, very tiny. And then it went back up again. Things move around. The race does change. When I say you can imagine it going the other way really quickly, what I really mean is in these close states, things can change very fast. A five-point lead is the kind of lead that you could have, you know, a few days before the election and still have the final result go the other way, because it's a small enough lead that if there was a major news event that was either for one candidate or made the other candidate look bad or whatever, you know, that's the kind of swing you could actually imagine happening, you know, almost instantaneously based on the right set of events. So I base my too close to call category on, hey, it's a closer than 5% margin between the two candidates, for exactly that reason. But certainly, like, when I say something like the weak states, you know, are fairly substantial, but there might be a little defense played, blah, 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 or the strong states, nobody has to worry about. Even those things can change over the course of the, you know, 3 months we have before the election. Otherwise, there'd be no point in me doing this analysis. So this really is a snapshot of how things are today, but you can still fairly clearly, you know, see the states that are solid, where the lead is greater than 10% by whoever's ahead, it really would take events of seismic proportions to start moving some of those states to be competitive even, let alone go over to the other side. The states that are between 5 and 10% aren't really in play right now, but you can imagine them getting into play with the right series of events and people campaigning and news cycles and blah, blah, blah. That can happen. And then the ones that I color gold on my map that are within 5% really are, look, nobody knows what's going to happen with those states. Now, you can say fairly well, you know, hey, well, Obama's 4.7% ahead in this state, so that's a pretty solid margin, and it's unlikely that it'll flip. You know, similarly, on the other side, like, for instance, Tennessee is almost a 5% lead for McCain, and if you look into it deeply, you might say, oh, well, that might actually be a ceiling on Obama's support. Yeah, it's hard to imagine Tennessee flipping. But, you know, hey, it's within 5%. That's a relatively small margin. You know, anything can happen when you're that close. Anyway, as my alarm goes off again. Oh, and it's 12 UTC, which means my phone automatically starts playing the BBC. So let me turn that off. Da, 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 da. Okay. News hour is starting. And you get an insight into the life of Sam. Anyway, the other thing I should mention about the campaign is that there's been another little blow up over something said by an aide. In this case, the long and short of it, without going into the details, so I guess that's just the short of it, is that a Romney aide actually... when somebody was commenting about something bad that had happened to them after they got laid off from a Bain company, said, well, if they'd lived in Massachusetts, they'd still have health care coverage, which is sort of admitting that Romney Care and what Romney did in Massachusetts might have been a good thing, which, of course, is interesting because it's very similar to Obamacare. And Romney's been sort of running away from what he did in Massachusetts, even though it was his, you know, arguably his biggest achievement in the state while he was governor. And then he immediately, the campaign gets slapped by basically the entire conservative world. How dare you make this kind of comment, et cetera, et cetera. And, there are two interpretations to this. One is it's just a campaign aid off message. And no big deal. It'll wash over. Maybe they'll fire the campaign aide. The other is that this is another trial balloon of Romney trying to have a sister soldier moment. Which is basically, for those of you who don't remember, the term came out of the Clinton campaign in 1992. But the idea is saying something to distance yourself from the base of your party. And say, you know, they may be, you know, extremist nut jobs who support me, but I'm not really that extreme. I'm really a lot more moderate. Go after the central folks. And... you know, I remember saying both of the last couple elections, actually, the same was true of McCain and now of Romney. If the guy was running as a moderate Republican, if Romney was, you know, talking about, you know, everything he'd done in Massachusetts and how in Massachusetts he had to work across the aisle because it was a liberal state. And look how he, you know, he may be a Republican, but he knows how to work with liberals, and he's not that radical, and look, he did a major healthcare reform, and it got more people insured. And what if he was running like that? He'd actually have a much better shot, I think, because he'd start appealing to the moderate middle. Of course, the problem is, and the same was the problem with McCain 4 years ago, is that in order to get nominated in the Republican Party, he had to move significantly right. And it's not just stuff he did during the campaign this time. I mean, he ran last time around in 2008, and he's been preparing for this for years. So he's been running to the right for a long time. And so, first of all, he flip-flopped to get from the moderate he was in Massachusetts to being more right-wing so that he could go through that process. And now, if he flip-flops back to the center, it's an even further trip than it would have been for McCain. Because he sort of had to take so many positions to sort of satisfy the base of the Republican Party, that it's to a large degree not credible. He could say it and people wouldn't believe him on the left or the center. But at the same time, you've got a really impassioned right-wing base at this point who just isn't going to take it. I mean, and that's what you see here with these statements that come out immediately. Like, you know, the right wing is on him, completely slamming him. Rush Limbaugh is making statements about this. Practically every conservative commenter is making comments about this, about how, he's giving a present to the Obama campaign and this is bad and anyway, you know, what do I actually believe? Romney probably actually is proud of what he did in Massachusetts with healthcare. He approved of it. He advocated for the time. You know, he's got a little bit of argument and says that it was good for a single state, but I don't advocate it nationwide. But he's not fundamentally against what he did previously. And so he's in a tough position. And this is what Santorum argued, of course, as to why he'd be a bad candidate, is because he couldn't run against healthcare very effectively because Obamacare and Romneycare are essentially the same damn thing. One done at a state level and one done at a national level. Obamacare was actually modeled on what Romney had done in Massachusetts, and some of the people who'd worked for Romney in Massachusetts helped draft the damn bill, or were involved in the process. I think I'm leaning towards this actually being an intentional trial balloon rather than a gaffe.
Alert from transmit.
As my computer starts talking. I don't know. It was an answer to a spontaneous question, so maybe not. Maybe it's just the guy going off the reservation. But I think you're going to see some of these things where every once in a while, Romney's doing a little bit of a trial balloon to try to move a little to the center, and every time he's getting slapped down, and he must be going, God damn it, guys.
Alert from BUP about some GD files.
Thank you, computer. He's going, God damn it, don't you want me to win? I can't win if I have to, like, toe the line on every conservative principle. We'll see. And we've gone over an hour. Damn it. So I was going to talk about Mountain Lion. Let me just do that for a minute or two. I haven't actually done the election update for Thursday yet, so maybe the election stuff will change again. Anyway, Mountain Lion, should I sing it again? I finally installed it. My delay was the drive I used for Time Machine backups was having problems, and I had to spend time troubleshooting and repairing that, and it seems to be working again now. But I wanted to, just like the advice tells you, I wanted to make sure that I had a full, complete backup with everything good before doing a major system upgrade. And in fact, I usually have several backups going. I wanted to make sure all of them were healthy. That took me a while. When I finally got that done, did the upgrade, no major problems so far. I can't say that I'm horribly impressed on the flip side. Messages is the new sort of combined, it's a replacement for iChat, and it's synced with, you know, your iOS devices, supposedly. It sort of works for me, but I haven't found much use for it different than iChat so far. Mail has this new VIP feature, but it's not quite what I thought it would be, and it's not as interesting to me because it's a smart mailbox for the people you designate from as VIPs. It basically has all the mail from them, but it's not just the mail that you have in your inbox. It's the mail you have in all your filed folders too, which I suppose is interesting, but you know, it makes it harder for me to distinguish between the mail from these people that I've already dealt with and the mail that I haven't dealt with. So I'm like, okay, maybe it's not that as useful as I thought, because, you know, I was thinking I could, you know, use it as a go there first and bang out the mail from the important people and then go look at my regular mailbox. But I can't quite do that. Because frankly, I very often read messages long before I'm ready to answer them or deal with them. So the distinction between what's in my inbox and what I've filed elsewhere is actually important. And I know, like, that's not how everybody uses their mail. And you know, for instance, things like Gmail discourage you from filing things away in folders and stuff like that, and instead it's tagging and blah, blah, blah. So there's different ways of working with email. And maybe I just have to adapt. Perhaps. I don't know. But, you know, it's all working smoothly. It did take a long freaking time, by the way, to do the upgrade, though. You know, it took when I was doing the upgrade itself, the initial estimate was 33 minutes. It actually took many, many hours to do the initial upgrade. And then once I launched mail again, it took something like 12 hours to import to the new format for the mail database or whatever it was doing. But this is because, for the main part, I'm sure it was doing a disk check on my disk. And I've got a 4 GB disk that's fairly full. Four terabyte disk that's fairly full. And for email, I've got millions of messages saved historically, including many duplicates because I haven't cleaned up the damn thing. So it took forever to do the upgrade. I've heard other people report getting it done very quickly who've got much lighter weight stuff on their computer. I have heard a couple problems from other folks who've upgraded. My mom upgraded, and she plays Scrabble. Not Words with Friends. She plays Words with Friends too, but she plays Scrabble on her computer. The game that came on a disc a couple years ago, and apparently it's not having fun with Mountain Lion. So crisis. We'll figure something out. But for the most part, smooth, solid update. As they say, snappier. Computer seems snappier, but that's, you know, probably an illusion. But things are working well. I like it. But nothing that, you know, really wows me. The computer basically feels the same. You've got these new sharing things, built in, but so far, for the most part, I haven't used them because I prefer, they don't give you as much control as doing it manually. And again, that's not going to be an issue for a lot of people. A lot of people are just going to click the button and boom, it's done. Yay. I don't know. I when you do it manually, you can specify more stuff and you can custom. I don't know. Maybe I just have to get used to it. Like as an example, if I'm sharing a web page, it brings up the little Twitter box on top of it, and it indicates that it's already snapshotted the URL. It gives me the space to put my comments. Well, typically, I want to include in the topics not just, you know, a pithy little comment from me, but when I'm reading an article, you know, I say reading - the title of the article and then parentheses the author of the article. That's not pre-filled in the Apple way of doing it. And and even the ones that do pre-fill it usually get it wrong. So I want to customize it, make sure the title's right, make sure the author's right. I don't typically link, you know, give the name of the publication. I give the name of the author because I think that's actually more important. But, you know, and I want to cut and paste these from the website. But the way it's done as a flyover that blocks out the rest of the page. So oftentimes I can't even see the part of the rest of the page I want to see. I can't move around the little thing. And I certainly can't copy and paste from the page into it, so I'm stuck. So I end up using another method where I can do those things. I don't know. It's interesting. The notification center, okay. It sort of works. I don't know. There's nothing mind-blowing about this release. I know they've done a bunch of behind-the-scenes things to make things smoother, more stable, whatever. Great. But, you know, it's solid, but not exciting. But you should still upgrade if you've got a Mac and you haven't upgraded yet. Because you just should always be on the most latest version. You should always be on the latest version unless there's a really damn good reason not to. Because everything over time is going to assume you're on the latest version. There's going to be software that requires it, etc., etc., etc. So unless you have a really good reason not to, you should upgrade. And we're now well over an hour, so I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you for joining us for Curmudgeon's Corner once again. Hopefully Yvonne will be back with us again tomorrow. On next week's show. In the meantime, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions or comments or thoughts or, you know, all the usual stuff. I would tell you to tweet the show, to share it on Facebook, etc., but I don't think anybody ever does. Sniff. Oh, poor me. Anyway, that's it. I'm now off to do the Thursday updates of the Electoral College model. So, you know, if you haven't, check election2012.abelsmay.com for any updates after I finish recording this show in a couple seconds. And I'll probably get this sucker out on Friday as usual. I really need to get this done earlier in the week. I know, I suck. Thanks for listening. Goodbye. Screw it. You know, I can get this thing out on Thursday. I can. I just finished recording. I've got a little bit of time before I have to leave for work. I can do it. It's going to come out Thursday, goddammit. Thursday, not Friday this week. Thursday. Here we go. Or, yeah, well, I'm done here. That's over for you who are listening, but okay, you don't care. I'm putting it out now on Thursday. Bye.